Well, good evening. It is good to be back with you again. Excited to be here and excited for this time, my parents to be able to join us this evening as well. Well, growing up, we got to watch, when we went over to Nana's house, we would go over and watch National Geographic videos, especially the ones more driven towards kids. And I think my brother and I really enjoyed watching them because it really brought these other places to life. Talked about places like Australia, Indonesia, Asia. But I think our favorite was probably Africa. It's because, at least I think it was, because of the iconic animals that are there. You know, that are called the Big Five. You get your elephants, rhinos, hippos, water buffalo, and lions. These are supposed to be the most dangerous animals in Africa. And interesting that four of those are herbivores. They don't eat people, they're just very aggressive. But lions, they tend to really strike a chord of fear in our lives because of how quickly they can turn on you. So if you will, turn over to 1 Peter chapter 5. We're going to be studying tonight out of 1 Peter chapter 5, verses 6 through 9. Well, like I said, lions can be a very destructive force. And in fact, one of the worst cases of lion attacks is in a little area called Tsavo, where just two male lions over a period of a couple months took and killed about 135 men in this little work camp as they're trying to build a bridge. 135 men got taken, and the stories that go along with this are, they really do send chills down your spine because of the accounts of what these men are enduring at night, not knowing if they're going to be taken, hearing the lions coming in and taking these men. Well, the lions are able to do this very effectively because of the way they hunt. Now, females do it differently. Female lions tend to hunt near the watering hole, and they use what's called pack tactics. So you get one, the head female. She'll pick out the prey, the target, and then she'll make herself known as she gets closer to them, and then she begins to charge. Well, all the other animals begin to run and cause chaos, not knowing what's happening, and that one prey begins to dart away. Well, then the other lionesses reveal themselves and converge upon that target and taking it down. They're quite fascinating to watch on such areas like YouTube, getting to watch these lions attack. But male lions are quite different in how they do it. They tend to do it either solo or, like I said, in pairs. And what they'll do is they work more in the brush. They'll sit and they'll watch to see which of their prey become a little overconfident and get a little bit too far away from the herd. And then they'll make themselves known and get that animal into the bush. And while that animal's in the bush, it's completely disoriented. It can't really see what's going on. It can't quite hear. In fact, the lion takes advantage of that. He begins to make low growls and rumbles as he's getting closer to it, but then he begins to circle the prey. He begins to circle it so it doesn't know where it's coming from. So now he's taken away two of its senses. He's taken away its vision and its sense of hearing. It doesn't know where it's coming from. And as he's circling, he's getting closer and closer and closer until he gets to a point where he feels comfortable. He'll let out a large roar, paralyzing his prey, and then he'll pounce, and then, gotcha. He's got it. He has a meal for the night. And that's a quite real image as to how Satan hunts us and gets to us, and what Peter talks about here in 1 Peter chapter 5. Let's begin in verse 6. He says, "Therefore humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you at the proper time, casting all your anxiety on him, because he cares for you. Be of sober spirit. Be on the alert. Your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion, seeking someone to devour. But resist him, firm in your faith, knowing that the same experiences of suffering are being accomplished by your brethren who are in the world." So our goal for this evening is this, is to take in what we see here in 1 Peter chapter 5 and identify some tactics that Satan uses to get us into the bush, to try to hunt us, and what we can do to avoid becoming his prey. So how does this lion hunt? Well, remember how I said began the male lion hunts. He begins with what I call an action of pride. As we see in verse 6, "Therefore humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you at the proper time." Why is he saying humble ourselves? Because pride is not a good thing here. Think about that. A male lion, again, he finds someone who's overconfident and is strayed away from the herd. He's strayed away from the rest of the family here. So there's a few things that I want to point out, maybe that can cause this actions of pride as far as us in the bush. The first is this, is trusting yourself over God. Think about what we say, what we read in Proverbs chapter 3, verses 5 through 6. It says, trust in the Lord with all your heart, and lean not on your understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge Him, and He will lead your paths straight. It can be really hard for us to let go. People do not like to be out of control or to know what's in the unknown. We really like what's comfortable, what we know is coming for us. But we have a God who loves us and who wants to do nothing but help us down the right paths. When we put ourselves, trust ourselves more than God, it tends to put us in a dangerous position and place. And the other one is this, is a mindset of, I'll call it spiritual independence. And this is something that's really been plaguing my generation and a few years ahead of that, is this idea of, I don't need this book exactly. I'm a good person. I think I know what it says. God knows my heart. I have a personal relationship with God. I don't need all the rules that exist in this book. He and I have an understanding. We're okay. And that is a very dangerous mindset or lifestyle to go around. You're kind of saying, I don't really need anybody but me. And that's, well, it's impossible to be an army of one. It's impossible to be an army of one. Whenever you go to defend yourself, you might have a strong shield to put up in front of you. But as soon as you're that one, anyone can go around that shield. And while you're defending against a few foes in front of you, someone's going to come up from behind and they're going to get you. And they're going to get you, well, where you can't expect and don't see it because you're trying to be an army of one. Or you may think, come in saying, well, my problems and my sins, they're my own or they're unique to me. Nobody else could be going and dealing with what I'm doing. Well, false. You know what Peter, Paul says in 1 Corinthians 10:13. No temptation's overtaken you except such as is common to man. There is no such thing as a unique sin. It might have a new face on it. It might seem a little bit different, but I'm fairly certain that if you feel that this is unique to you, that it's never affected you somewhere, you probably know somebody or could easily get in contact with somebody who's dealt with this before. You know, that's actually a very encouraging thing, though, because that means that somebody's dealing with that same issue or has dealt with it, and they can hopefully help you get over that hump and get through it. It can't be an army of one. You can't survive alone. Or we might say this. Another thing that we could do is we might build ourselves up in our minds as untouchable, indestructible, invincible, that I've built up my defenses, I've built these walls, I'm good. He's not going to be able to get me. The lion can't get in and hunt me. And I'll say this, this is probably when we're in our most danger. This is when we're in the most danger, is because we get comfortable. We've gotten comfortable and we begin to get a little lax and a little lazy in our thoughts and our defenses because we think the walls are nice and tight. And at that point, when we get that lazy, is when the lion can reach his claws in and get you and pull you out. Now, I do want to say this, though, that it is important for us not to dwell upon our past sins and our past transgressions. Don't dwell upon it. Don't make that your every thought and how you are moving through life. But don't forget your past. Remember, we're supposed to be building up our strength and building up our weaknesses. These things that we do, if you don't let go, it's going to hold you back. And it's going to keep you tied down. And if you do let go completely, all the way, you're going to leave that door wide open again for Satan to come in. Remember what Paul has said about himself multiple times throughout the epistles. He calls himself the chief among sinners. He says that I've done all sorts of things, terrible things in my past, and people would not let me forget about it. But I didn't let that control my life and dictate how I went throughout life. Paul acknowledged what he did and acknowledged what happened, and he moved on. But he always had that in the back of his head still, that he remembered where he came from and what was going on with this. Well, the next thing that Satan does, I think, to hunt us down is this, is through the scent of anxiety. And that's in verse 7. Cast all your anxiety on him because he cares for you. Remember how the lion hunts when he's in the bush. He has separated him. He's taken away your vision, and then he begins to disorient you as he's moving around and setting up anxiety to where you don't know what's happening. You begin to get tense and stressful and stress out. So what happens, though, when worry takes over us? Well, as the lion does before he jumps, he causes us to become spiritually paralyzed. That means we stop growing. We forget to come back to the book. And we begin to can forget to be one with one another, growing in this nature, and we stop growing spiritually. Or maybe we can say our defenses become lowered. It's easier for Satan's lies to seep in and to attack us. Or, I would say even most importantly, our lights begin to burn a little bit less. In this instance of, I would say, with joy. We begin to have little or no joy in our life. And that's, I think, one of the biggest things that sets us apart from the rest of the world, is our sense of joy, especially when times tend to get hard. We remember that there's someone and something better for us in the end. And in fact, we have a God who's on our side, who's going to take care of us no matter what. And when that light begins to burn a little less and our joy begins to come and go and go and go, how are people in the world supposed to know who we are and what we're about? That we're Christians, and that we live and act in a different way. And there's some really encouraging verses that come with us here about giving our anxiety back to the Lord. Look in Psalm 55, verse 22. It says, "Cast your burden upon the Lord, and He will sustain you, and He will never allow the righteous to be shaken." Give it to God. He can bear everything. He's the Creator. He can bear it all, and He's going to sustain us. He's going to take care of us, and He will not allow us to be shaken. Or what He says about Himself personally in Isaiah 41:13, He says, "For I am the Lord your God, who upholds your right hand, who says to you, 'Do not fear, I will help you.'" That is such an encouraging verse. That's the Lord speaking through Isaiah personally, saying, "I am the Lord your God, I'm Creator, I'm Master. I'm your biggest fan. I want to see you do nothing but succeed." And when He says, "who upholds your right hand," at this time, your right hand, everyone's right-handed. It was your strength hand. This is, you did everything with your right hand. In fact, the name of Benjamin means son of my right hand, son of my strength. If God's got your right hand, this is the hand that's supposed to direct and lead you and do everything. You do everything with your right hand. If He's holding on to it, He's saying, "I've got you. I'm going to direct you. Trust in me. I've got you." And He says, "Do not fear. I will help you." Such an encouraging verse when it comes to our anxiety of this, knowing that we can go and turn back to the Lord, that He has our back. And then in verse 8 is the last thing that Satan does to, or can do to see, to get to us. And that is, he sees that his prey is unaware. "Be of sober spirit, be on the alert. When all other defenses are gone and everything is down, that is when the lion pounces to take the prey down." So what does it mean to be sober here? Well, we know what the modern definition of sober is. It tends to deal with sobriety and remaining aware, not to alcohol or things like that. But in this case, it doesn't quite mean that. It means to be clear-minded. Keep your focus on the important things. To be sensible and thoughtful. Think about what we're doing and the actions we're taking. Be vigilant. And when we become distracted by the unimportant things in life, all sorts of different things, that is what Satan is looking for and waiting for, so he can get in, worm his way in, and really begin to destroy our confidence in God and destroy our confidence in ourselves through lies and manipulation, saying, you know, he's not really there. That's what he did with Eve back in the garden. He said, "Is that really what he said? You're not going to die." Using lies and manipulation to get around and to worm his way in, to really make you become unaware of our situations, to steal that vigilant, that sober nature in our lives. That's going to keep you protected. So, how do we avoid becoming his prey? There are three things here. We just talked about it. Keep aware is the first thing. As he says, be of sober spirit. Be on the alert. Satan does not take breaks. He is active and hunting 24/7, 365. He does not take any breaks or vacations. We can't either. We need to stay on the alert. So, how do we do that? Well, How do we stay vigilant? Well, we go back to the Word. Look at what Jesus did in Luke chapter 4. Turn over with me to Luke chapter 4. This is when Jesus is in his temptation period, right after he's been made known to John the Baptist, and he's taken into the land. Peter tells us in 1 Peter 3:15 to always be ready and give a defense. That's what Jesus is doing here. Luke chapter 4, verse 1. Jesus, full of the Holy Spirit, returned from the Jordan and was led around by the Spirit in the wilderness for 40 days, being tempted by the devil. And he ate nothing during these days. And when they ended, he became hungry. And the devil said to him, "If you are the Son of God, tell this stone to become bread." And Jesus answered him, "It is written that man shall not live by bread alone." And then he led him up and showed him all the kingdoms of the world in a moment of time. And the devil said to him, "I will give you all this domain and its glory, for it has been handed over to me, and I will give it to whom I wish. Therefore, if you worship before me, it shall all be yours." And Jesus answered him, "It is written, you shall worship the Lord your God and serve him only." And then he led him to Jerusalem, had him stand on the pinnacle of the temple, and said to him, "If you are the Son of God, throw yourself down from here, for it is written, he will command his angels concerning you to guard you, and on their hands they will bear you up, so that you will not strike your foot against a stone." And Jesus answered to him and said, "It is said, you shall not put the Lord your God to the test." And when the devil had finished every temptation, he left him until an opportune time. Jesus, in his trial with the lion here, with his encounter, he goes back to the Word. He sets up a defense and he goes back to God to rely upon him to get him through this strength. He goes back to the Word to stay strong. Well, another thing we can do to keep aware is this, is simply pray. Pray. It's a simple idea here, but how else are we supposed to form this relationship with our Father? How else do we form relationships with one another? We talk and we share and we get to know one another and build upon one another in this. That's what we do when we pray to God. How else can we have a relationship with Him unless we're constantly in contact and talking to Him? We keep aware by putting somebody else up with us. And that's the last part of this to keep aware. Is connect with somebody. And connect with somebody who can be objective in this. What I mean by this is simply this, is find somebody who can help you, who's gone through something and can stand with you and look out. We're going to move from one animal to another real quick. Think about the meerkat. Have you ever seen the shows about like Meerkat Manor or how they work? It's really interesting. While all of them are out and going about their day, they have one who stands vigilant, the sentinel. He stands and watches up on a large rock looking for all sorts of things, for the hawk, for jackals, for hyenas, looking around to make sure that they're all safe. And as soon as he sees something that's going to cause him danger, he makes a quick bark and sounds the alarm, and everybody disappears real quick down into the holes. And they look and make sure that everybody is okay and safe, that everyone is protected. They have connected with somebody. They've set somebody up in their life to look out for them and to protect them from the dangers. We need to make sure we're doing that in our lives. While we're out looking for food and looking to take care of ourselves in our life, we need to make sure we have somebody who's looking and standing tall for us, looking out to protect us in this. Well, the second thing we can do is this. We need to remain firm and resist. Think about what he says in verse 7 and verse 9 of 1 Peter chapter 5. I turned back over there, I lost my mark. He says in verse 7, to cast all your anxiety on him because he cares for you. And then he says, and resist him and be firm in your faith. We should not and cannot go out unarmed. And by this I mean when we go out and we leave the village, safety of the village, safety of this family, you need to make sure that we are armed. Ephesians chapter 6. Ephesians chapter 6, verses 13 to 17 says, "Therefore take up the full armor of God, so that you will be able to resist in the evil day, having done everything to stand firm. Stand firm, therefore, having girded your loins with truth, and having put on the breastplate of righteousness, and having shod your feet with the preparation of the gospel of peace. In addition to all, taking up the shield of faith, with which you'll be able to extinguish all the fiery arrows of the evil one. and put on the helmet of salvation and the sword of the Spirit, which is the Word of God. Doesn't that sound quite familiar to what Jesus did back in Luke 4? I think he went out very much armed, ready to do battle. In fact, we see him using the sword of the Spirit, the Word, to get back at Satan. We need to make sure we're going out unarmed, because as soon as we're missing just one of those pieces, the rest of you is open. Imagine you try to go out to war without the breastplate on, without a helmet on. You're quite open. A shield, if you're missing your shield, you're open to being able to be taken down. And the same thing happens if you go out into the bush with the lion. If you go out unarmed, you're probably going to get taken down. But we also need to remember and to resist. So resisting by putting on armor, but remember the promises that God has given us. We've talked about a couple of them already. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge Him, and He will lead you down straight paths. He wants and is going to guide you if you put your faith and trust into Him. He's not going to lead you astray. Or in 1 Corinthians 10:13, no temptation is overtaking you such as common to man, but God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but with the temptation will provide a way of escape also that you will be able to endure it. He's going to support us. I can only imagine if God was gone, not looking over after me, what sort of things could be attacking and really trying to take me down. I don't want to think about that. I'm so very thankful that I have a God who is doing all He can to look out for me and knows what I can take and what I can endure. And not allow for that to happen, but He keeps the worst of it away from me. That is a great promise to have. We have a God who wants to support us. And then He's put us up a home all throughout the Word. He tells us about this home that's waiting for us, a glorious place, a perfect place, a peaceful place, a safe place for us to end our journey. Because as we've now left the safety of this village, we're on a dangerous road. But He's made a promise for us. And there's a safe place, a wonderful place waiting as long as we stay with Him on that straight path through the bush. And then the last of all of this is this. We need to make sure that we stay together. Stay together. Don't go out on the road alone. Christianity is a hard, hard walk to do alone. In fact, I'm going to go as far as say it's impossible, truly impossible to do it alone. You really need to have somebody there who you can rely on and can be supported by. And we need to make sure we're building each other up in everything, especially in these kind of two things. Build yourselves up in worship. And this is where we can build ourselves up. What we're doing tonight, this is building ourselves up in worship. We're doing it in a positive setting, a place where we know that people are going to love and think about you and do nothing but support you. Look at what he says in Colossians 3:16. Colossians 3:16, let the word of Christ richly dwell within you, with all wisdom, teaching, and admonishing one another with psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs, singing with thankfulness in your hearts to God. That's what we're doing tonight. We're teaching one another. We're admonishing one another. We're building each other up. And we're holding each other accountable for the things that we do. Think about some of the words in these songs that we sing. Think about these words. These are songs of prayer, songs of oaths. Now, let's sing this song, I want to be a worker for the Lord. That is a pretty bold, strong statement when you say that. I want to be a worker for the Lord. That's what we're talking and saying to God. And that's what I'm singing and talking to you. That's why when we sing, we're speaking to one another. We're there to hold each other up and to hold each other accountable for this. In fact, in all of this, this is why we have a family. Why we were put together with this is because we can build each other up. And like this is in our struggles with this, our worship and other things in our life, we have a family here who's going to do nothing but love and support you. And that's the beautiful part of a family. They're going to do nothing but try to get you further down the path. They're going to love you, that's that they should, and make sure that they're loving you and helping you and building you up in all of this. Nobody's going to love you more than your family ever will. And they want nothing but to see you succeed in life and your spiritual walk. And lastly, I want to identify one big lie. I want to say one of Satan's greatest lies when it comes to things like the assembly is that when we admit we have a problem, So a lot of people tell themselves this lie that people are going to see me in a much different light. They're going to look down on me. They aren't going to think the same of me. It's going to be bad, negative thing. I'm just going to hold it in. I'm going to keep it to myself. And really, that toxin's just going to keep working its way, and it's going to take you down. And it's going to make it easier for the lion to get at you. But it's a big, big lie because of this. Such a false statement. The opposite occurs. When we share our problems with one another, when we find somebody close that we can work with and build each other up with, they're not going to look down on you. In fact, they're going to do the opposite. They're going to build you up. They're going to do nothing, but they're going to lift you up and bring you up before the throne and ask God to take care of you and to help you in your walks. Isn't that what we should be wanting to do? Instead of holding in and bringing ourselves down, thinking others are going to take us down, they're going to build us up. And they're going to break us up. They're going to build us up and help us to grow stronger in all of these things. In fact, I find it very comforting to know that in my struggles, I have people that I can turn to. They're going to help me. In fact, they're not perfect people. None of us are perfect people. We're people that are all on the same walk together, trying to find that great means to an end. And we're doing nothing, should do nothing but support each other in all of this to make sure that we all get to that promised home in the end. So I want to conclude with this one final thought for this evening. What do we see when the beast finally finishes circling and makes himself known? Look back at 1 Peter 5 and verse 9, or verse 8. And I think it's a really important word that Peter uses here. He says, "Your adversary the devil prowls around like a roaring lion." That word "like" is very important there. Because this beast that shows up is not the lion. It's an imitation. It's a fake. It is not the real lion. And as soon as we're sitting there paralyzed, not knowing it's about to happen, then the real lion appears. And he is not happy. Behold, the lion that is from the tribe of Judah, the root of David, has overcome as soon as we open the book, and it's seven seals. The real lion appears, it's the Lion of Judah, and he is angry. How dare this fake and this phony be hunting within his kingdom, within his lands, attacking his people? He's quite angry that this beast is there. In fact, the lion then moves to our side as a protector and as one who's going to stand by us. This Lion of Judah, he stands with us, and he shows us what the real king looks like. Not this fake, this phony. And what he does is he causes him to run. Causes him to run the other direction, because nobody can stand against the king of the jungle. Against the king of our lives. And this should cause us to be so very glad that he is on our side. So tonight, if you need help, if you need to find a way and you want to be on the side of the one true lion, the one true king, we offer this opportunity. Or if you need to make your life right again, if you have struggled and fallen prey to the hunt, the king is there and he's willing to come to take care of you and support you and fight back the phony that's there. If you need help from your brothers and sisters, come forward now as we stand and as we sing.